Welcome everybody to Midweek Mysticism. This is an exciting moment. This is the week I'm confident now that we will finally get to the secret name of God, Kuzu B'muchsa's Kuzu, that appears on the back of the mezuzah. And so we'll get to other things too, but we'll get to that also. I mean, we're there, so now I'm going to just explain it a little more. I want to give a special welcome to new attendees, some of whom have been listening virtually, specifically Cheryl Greenfield. Welcome. Every week we've been adding, it seems like, a new person to this group, not a new human, but really welcome back. I believe you were here at the beginning, way at the beginning, when we had this idea that we could study the Zohar together. And so it's a privilege to have you with us. And apologies, last week when I created a recurring Zoom class, for whatever reason, Zoom decided that a recurring event needed its own ID and that I couldn't use my regular host ID for that, which I did not realize was not possible. And there was some ambiguity and some people missed when they tried to attend. So I apologize to those people. Okay. And with that, we'll jump in. We're going to do this paragraph again. So I'm going to read this paragraph. Here, Yikavu, let the waters be gathered. And then I'm going to explain a few things about it. First, I'll read it. We read it last week, but at the end. Yikavu, and this is again the verse, Yikavu Hamayim. El makom echad, v'tira'eh hayabasha v'hichin. The verses, let the waters be gathered to one place, el makom echad, and let the dry land appear, and let it be so. So what's happening in the creation is the waters are gathering, and the land is appearing where the waters gather into seas and lakes and rivers and oceans and whatnot. And so you get the land and the water, and that's what it is. That's what the verse says. Now we are understanding the mystical meaning of the waters gathering. Because when the mystics hear about waters gathering, they think not about the topography of planet Earth only, although that is also a reflection of what is occurring, but about the mystical energy, which is often described as a flow of water, a flow of blessing, of water. Yikavu, let the waters be gathered, surveying by kav, line and measure. Measure plum of dark brilliance, as is written. Who measured the waters with the hollow of his hand? This is Yikavu Hamayim. Let the waters be aligned in a line. Here is the measure of the creator of the worlds. Yud Hey Vav Hey. Holy, holy, holy. Yud Hey Vav Hey of hosts. Holy, holy, holy. Let the waters be aligned. Yud Hey Vav Hey of hosts to one place in the mystery of this name. The whole earth is full of his presence. Let the dry land appear. Engraved mystery, name of unity, Kuzu B'muchsa's Kuzu. So today we're going to learn the mystical meaning of the Kedusha prayer, according to the Zohar. End of the mezuzah, according to the Zohar. So, what happened here? First thing first, surveying by kav, line and measure. We're now using the metaphor of God as land surveyor. This is a funny metaphor. Not funny, but people have seen land surveyors, yeah? People ever seen land surveyors measuring the land? Right, they have those like instruments, on the tripod with the little thing, and they. So I don't know what in Spain in the 13th century a land surveyor used. But I imagine the equipment was someone they like have a homework project. What was a land surveyor doing in 13th century Spain? But I imagine it's the kind of thing that hasn't changed all that much over the years, right? It's like shoemaking. It's a craft, and so line and measure, right? That makes sense. Well, when God is putting the oceans into things, he's kind of bounding them in particular boundaries. In other words, God is taking the divine energy. And just as the seas move into specific places where they have shores and boundaries, more or less, and just it's kind of like what a land surveyor does of demarcating the boundaries of things. Well, that's what God did. There's all this liquid energy, and Yikavu, let the waters be gathered. I mean, God took God's energy and said, well, let's create some parameters for this stuff to live in. Those parameters are, of course, the spherot, the 10 spherot. Let's take the divine energy and give it property demarcations. I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. Measure plum of dark brilliance. Now, of course, we're not really talking about property. We're talking about, this is a term that's been used before, butzina de cardinuta, the spark of darkness. It's like the sound of silence, Zohar style. It's the dark brilliant, the spark of darkness. Someone wants to do a mashup of Simon and Garfunkel's The Sound of Silence to the Zohar would be the spark of brilliance. They call it dark brilliance, but I think the spark of darkness is actually a better way to say it. Okay. Now, I want
Quick
to say something else
question.
about that. Yeah.
What's the word for plumb, and is it really the surveying word for a plumb line? A string with a weight at the bottom.
The Aramaic is a little more ambiguous. It actually is repetitive. I'll read it. Ikavu, let the waters be gathered. Mididu dekavu mishkata, measuring by a line. Umishkata, this word mishkata, like being drawn after or a measure. Mishchata butzina de cardinuta. Measure the spark of darkness. So, no, it is not really that.
So Matt was running with the metaphor when he went into English.
He embellished the metaphor. Translational question of, I'm sure Daniel Matt is very precise. So why he felt comfortable embellishing the metaphor, unless there's a different text than the one I'm looking at. But it just says measure dark brilliance in the actual text of the Zohar. Plum of dark brilliance is apparently added. Does that do anything for you, Peter Salson? You asked the question, so I'm guessing there's a reason you.
Well, I guess I was wondering to what extent they really wanted to make it literally surveying, and if there was literally a word that meant plumb line, that's an important part of that instrument, the transit that you were referring to.
Oh, yes. Okay. You know more about this than I
Yeah.
do.
So if it's not there literally in the text, I can live with that too. It's all right.
It's not there literally, but I guess Matt felt it was so obvious that he felt comfortable adding it into a translation, not an interpretation. We could write him and ask why we wanted to. He's responsive. I ask him questions sometimes, and he always responds. Okay. Which is very kind of him. Okay. So now we go to Isaiah, who measured the waters with the hollow of his hand. And this is going to begin the Isaiah mashup. or we're going to interplay two verses. This is the thing the Zohar does sometimes, where it equates two verses by going phrase, 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 phrase from one verse, phrase from second verse, as if to interweave them, as if to say they're talking about one mystical secret, but also deepening, not just equating, but deepening the meaning of both with the other. It's a kind of way of learning in the Zohar.
Gary,
So,
I have a question.
yeah.
Just to orient myself, what's the difference between the italics and the highlighted words? Are they all in the translation or?
Yeah, so the italic words are quotes from the Bible. That's a great question. And everything else is a quote from everything is in the Zohar here except for plum. But the italics are quotes from the Bible. So we're going to go to Isaiah as a way of saying that this secret is in the Kedusha. But first, you need to know something that they already know, which is that there was a phrase amongst the Heichalot school, and the person who did the work on this is named Peter Schaefer. If you're looking for the academic who did the work on this, the origin of this phrase, Schaeffer with like a two dots over the, he's German. There's probably a name for that. So there's a phrase, Aye Mekom Kivodo, where is the place of his glory, which was a mantra. Where is the place of his glory? Aye Mekom Kivodo, which was a mantra amongst the Heichalot, school, the early mystics before Kabbalah was even Kabbalah. And what they understood it to be code for is twofold. One, it's a question of yearning. Where is God's place? In fact, Yehuda Levi wrote a famous poem based on this, not a mystical poem. People know that poem? I know what I'm talking about.
Wisha ana emtaacha. Wisha, I find you. I find when I go out to meet you, I find you coming out to meet me.
Yeah,
Something.
something like that. So Yehuda Levi, the great Spanish poet, wrote a poem sort of on this, but not a mystical, I mean a beautiful poem. So they understood that Aye, where is the place of your the in the yearning for God, where is God? That there's a code. The letters Aleph, Yud, and Hey are actually the place where we'll find God. And how? By spelling God's names in different combinations with Aleph, Yud, and Hey, with these letters. So it's a technical code. And it's like a secret password, as it were. And it appears in the Kedusha as a phrase, but to those who know, it's a secret password. And so, trying to do this. Yeah. So you could spell God's name, which is Yud Hey Vav Hey. You could spell it all with Yuds. You see, so, sorry. Yud Hey. You see, I spelled the letter Hey, Hey Yud. And then Vav. Sorry. I'm gonna get this. You see my Hebrew typing competence here. Okay. So you see how I spelled the name of God with yuds. I spelled out the letters. I phonetically sounded out the letters, and I did it with yuds every time there's an option. And that comes to a numerology of 72 or and then I could also do. Now, why these particular ways? There may be reasons, but it's also just kind of a tradition. Whoa, what happened here? I don't know. Is it working? Or is it going backwards? Thanks for bearing with me. Oh. So you see here, I spelled it, but I took this yud and the vav and I made it an aleph. So it's the same, but I reduced it by 9. So it will be what they call the name of 63. Let's finish it out. Now, this is the one that Zohar, our Zohar, is going to quote in a minute. There's the name all with olives. You can spell every letter with an olive and have it sound sort of correct. That's 45, or the name of Ma. Let's tell you it's 45. And then, 45. And then finally, you could. Thanks for bearing with me. You could spell it with nothing in between. And that will get you 52 if you add up the value of the numbers. So traditionally, these things were associated with different sfirot. Chochma, Bina, Tiferet, and Malchut. There's something to say about why. So the Zohar is assuming you know all of this, which is why I'm telling you this, because if you don't know this, then it's hard to understand this passage a little bit. So they are assuming that, so that's what Ayeh Mekom Kevodo means. Where is the place of his glory? Well, his names literally live in worlds that are created as manifestations of the divine name. You follow? In other words, these are not different than God. These sefirot are emanations of God. They're appearances of divinity, but in a slightly bounded form. In a constructed form that God chooses to construct. But they are God's constructions of God's self and God's name. And if you add all of these up, you do a little math, 72 and 63 is
That's 135, right?
135, and then plus 45.
180.
180 plus 52 will get you 232,
Yep.
which coincidentally is the gematria of mim komo, from his place. So they understand that in the Kedusha, and the Kedusha is constructed based on this mystical secret of the Heichalot school, an earlier school before the Kabbalah, that where is the place of his glory? Mikum Mim komo hu yifan berachamim. From his place, he turns with mercy. They understand that is a response. From his place, all of the permutations of the names of Ayeh produce his place. God's place are the sefirot, or the dwelling of these things. And so the Kedusha is supposed to be a code for this, but people don't know that. It's just a thing for songs. So, you know, it's I am Mekom Kavodo, etc. Mim Komohu Yifen Brachmi. Because the Zohar is in this place right now, they're going to now relate the verses in Isaiah to this thing. But you need to know this kind of framework of what the Kedusha is doing. By the way, it's for this reason that, and I think I've mentioned this in like the Art Scroll High Holidays Maaseh, they say, when you say the word Ayeh, the Kabbalists attributed great importance to this moment, or something like this, you know? So this is what I hate. Forgive me for going on a rant, and then we'll get back to our point. I hate when the books tell you this is very, very important Kabbalistically. They just make it seem like some kind of gibberish. Like, okay, this is a randomly important moment. And they say, you know, the righteous will insert prayers here. So they have a prayer for livelihood and a prayer for children who fear God and a prayer for healing from illness. And all these prayers because it's such a fraught moment. It's true. The mystics thought it was a very, very important moment, and they wanted the chazan to sing an extended thing when he chanted Ayah in Makom Kivoto because they understood. But it has real meaning. It's not just a random important moment. There was a framework for which it was meaningful, and that's a specific framework. It's not just randomly important. Does that make sense? Okay. I probably should save this chart. I can email it out. It's not the best chart, but so we're going to be working with this name in a minute, but you should understand that that name is the name of Tiferet, not just Tiferet, but Tiferet and all of its spokes. Chesed Gevura, if you imagine there's a wheel with spokes, Chesed Gevura Tiferet Netzach Hod and Yesod, and you kind of Tiferet as being the this manifestation of God's most of God's lower attributes, six of the lower seven, other than Shechina. The only other thing I'll say is this last name, Yud Hei Vav Hei, has no extra letters because it is only receiving, right? It's like a pure, it's a hey, it's a pure receptor kind of name. And so it doesn't really give energy to other worlds. That is the final destination of divine energy. It is the Vitera Ehaya Basha, let the land appear. It's the end of the verse. Okay. Questions on this or observations? And then we're going to go back to the text. But
Is there any more detail you can give on why each of the spirit will kind of correlate with each one?
yeah, sure, I could do that. So the first name having yuds that fill it is a sense that the very first letter of the divine name, yud, yud hey vav hey, represents chokhmah in its physical form, in its graph, because the pictograph yud is a point. And that is understood to represent, conceptually, and I take this from the Alter Rebbe, Shneur Zalman of the Adi. He understood that the point of the yud is what we in our society would call a light bulb or aha. He relates physically that the yud looks like a burst of creativity, which usually comes to us in something that's hard to grasp. It's the moment, as the Alter Rebbe says it in the Tanya, of when you know you have a great idea or the solution to a thing, but have not yet grasped what that is. And I think we've all known that experience of like when you know. I get it each week because I'm a pulpit rabbi, Rabbi Confer. I don't know if you ever had this, but you have to give a sermon. So in good weeks, there's a moment. I wait for the moment when I know what I'll speak about on Shabbat. I don't like sit down to try and figure it. I wait for the I'll speak about that. And it just comes at some point. And usually, so I get to experience this every week very tangibly. When that moment comes, I don't yet know what I'm going to speak about at the first moment I know it. I just know that the idea is somewhere in my head. And then I have to like try and not get distracted to like make sure I don't lose that. It's like trying to remember a dream before it's gone. And then usually I have to try and remember later what I thought of earlier because I just forgot to write it down or lost the napkin and it's like gone. So they imagine that the yud is that like fleeting idea that could be gone one moment, you know, that creative idea, the solution. It's creativity, essentially, which they consider chokhmah, which is the beginning of divine wisdom. It's very fragile, rare, hard to locate. So that's represented by yud. So if we want to then emanate that, it makes sense to take that yud as the beginning of a kind of world of emanation and place that yud throughout the name. In other words, to begin to get that energy to diffuse or infuse. So it's a graphic representation of the diffusing of divine creativity or wisdom coming from beyond. You know, coming from Keter, coming from a place where it isn't bounded. So that's the yud. Then we go to Bina, a kind of womb or birthing of it. And there's a sense in which that yud comes into hey, comes into the next letter, which often represents Bina. So they imagine almost the yud entering the hey. Here it's written separately and kind of giving birth. But when it gives birth to something, the thing it gives birth to is a kind of beginning, an aleph of it's the kind of the beginning of, but it's also a reduction of that divine idea into something quite specific. And so aleph represents both a start, but also a reduction of the kind of yud or creativity into something more tangible, the beginning of an alphabet. And so, or number one. So they reduce the vav with an aleph, so to speak. To show that. Now the yud is still there at the end to signify, in theory, that even with this, it's still the original divine energy. It's not really reduced. It's just packaged in a format that's communicable. Finally, we get to a place where, hey, well, look, at some point, God is going to manifest God's self as a personage that is relatable. God, the human, you know, that you see in the Bible, who gets angry and regrets and all those things, or in the mystical version of it, has all these characteristics of loving kindness and strictness and all that stuff, chesed, gevurah. And then finally, the Shekhinah, kind of just receiving without any giving energy. So there is a sense in which you could go through each of the names and their specific reasons for their choices. Or I could also say it's like just a mystical tradition. Further comments or questions? So, given all of that, here is the measure of the creator of the worlds. Now they're going to assume your knowledge of everything I just said and intersperse the divine name Yod Heh Vav Heh with Aleph's. You see this here, which we know is the name of Tiferet, the third of those four names, because God is measuring, that is bounding, creating boundaries like a surveyor for God's energy. So now they're going to show how this all relates to the Kedusha. So they're going to do this thing. Kadosh, 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 Hashem Svekot Melocha La'aretz Kvodo. That's the verse in Isaiah. Holy, holy, holy. Half Torah from last week, yeah? Lord of hosts, the whole world is full of his glory. Kadosh, 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 let the waters be aligned. So what they imagine, let me open the sphero chart. Oh, that's not English. I know this is old. Okay. So like this. Kadosh, Kadosh. Oh, sorry. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet. So they imagine that we are now working within the name Yud Heh Vav Heh, or the spokes that are connected to Tiferet. And so they imagine the Kedusha is Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Now, what's the plain meaning of the Kedusha? The plain meaning is one angel says Kadosh, another angel says Kadosh, and then the third Kadosh is the assertion of the matter itself. Kadosh. Of all the angels declared, God is in fact holy. So the Kabbalists take that energy of one angel says Kadosh, another angel responds holy, and then God is holy as one sort of energy. Chesed energy is holy or is divine. Gevurah energy is divine to the other side. Kadosh, God is Kadosh. Chesed, you see, they understand it like that. Okay, now watch, which is related to. Right. Let the waters be aligned to kind of getting it in a line. The next word is Hashem of hosts, Hashem Tzvakot, Lord of hosts, to one place. So, Chesed Gevurah Tiferet. Hashem Tzvakot, Lord, Hashem represents the Tiferet of hosts of all these energies. Hashem Tzvakot, to one place, gathering all the energy to Yesod, right? So all of the divine energy that is removed and distant, Kadosh, meaning like holy or removed, is filtered down, Hashem Tzvakot, Lord of hosts, to Yesod, and then to one place in the mystery of this name, Yod Heh Vav Heh, because that's the name drawing it down. But here they specifically mean Yod Heh Vav Heh spelled like this name, the mystery of this name, the 45 number name. The whole earth is full of his presence. Let the dry land appear. So, do you see they've interspersed? Yikavu Hamayim Kadosh Kadosh Kadosh. Hashem Tzvakot HaMakom Achad V'Tere'ev HaYabasha Melocha La'aretz Kvodo. Do you see they did like an alignment of the names? I don't know. Right, if wanted to. But. Kadosh is Yikavu Hamayim. Hashem, Lord of Hosts. Amakom Echad, because it God gathers the disparate energies of the waters to one place. And then Melocha La'aretz Kavodo, the whole earth is full of his glory. It becomes there is earth. The Te'ra'eh Yabasha, the earth appears. So the Zohar is making an associational link between three systems, a system of divine names, the Kedusha practice, and the creation of the universe. In other words, when we recite Kedusha, we are drawing on the secret of divine names and angelic energy to actually recreate the world. The Kedusha is not just, in this version of it, praise of God as holy, but the Kedusha is the very recreation of the world by bringing the energies that are disparate in Tiferet or that are in the divine chariot down to the world. And we do so by approximating the angels in this version of it, like literally becoming God's messengers and actually assuming the posture and praise of the angels. In this context, the lifting up on the feet at the kind of refrains makes even more sense because we below are like trying to reach up to energies above in order to bring them down. And so there's a real sense in this mystical yearning and also the bowing that people do to different directions in the Kedusha at the beginning, one way, and then the other represent a kind of chesed, gevura, tiferet, like represents, it's probable, though it's not certain, that that bowing for those that do it is a mystical custom. Okay, the whole earth is full of his presence. Let the dry land appear. Engraved mystery. Name of unity. Kuzu b'muchzaz kuzu. Okay, so now we're relating a fourth system yet, the Shema. So we took one system, two systems, three systems, four systems, and the Zohar is comparing them all or equating them all. The Shema, we understand that we say Shema Israel. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Right? So Hashem, the first Hashem is Chesed. Elokeinu is Gevura. The final Hashem is Tiferet. And then Echad is Yesod. It's bringing down all of those divine energies. Hashem, Chesed, Elokeinu, Gevura, Hashem. Well, that's the Tiferet name. Again, Echad, one, Yesod. Let's go to the chart. I'll just do some mapping. Kadosh, Kadosh. Do you see a hand when I point or no? Do I have a, do you see my mouse or no?
Yes.
Yeah, so Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Hashem Tzvakot. Melocha La'aretz Kvodo. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuto Li'olam Va'ed. So they're saying that these things are, all a version of Ayei Mekom Kevodo. Where is the place of his glory? Well, if you measure it and equate it, these are the places with Aleph here. So, Kuzu bin Mukhsa's Kuzu, what is that about? What it's literally about. Anyone want to say how do you derive this name, this special name of God?
Well, I'll say it in the name of my teacher, Rabbi Lehman, who was a Bible scholar in town and loved codes. So it's a code in which you take the letter before the letter at hand. So kuzu, the letter before that in the alphabet, is yud. The letter before vav is hey.
The letter before Zion is Vav, and the letter before Vav is Hey. So that's Yud Hey, Vav Hey, God's name. B'muchzaz, Bet, the letter before is Aleph. The letter before Mem is Lamed. The letter before Vav is Hey. The letter before Chaf is Yud. And the letter before Samach is Nun, and the letter before Zion is Vav. So if you didn't catch that, it's Elokeinu. And then again, Hashem. So as Rabbi Dollinger pointed out, that's part of the Shema if you cut it up. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Did that come
Perfect.
across?
Does everyone understand that? Right, so it's just the next letter in a code. And it appears on the back of your mezuzahs, assuming you have mezuzahs, or corresponding to Hashem Elokeinu Hashem, on the back of the mezuzah is written, Kuzu b'muchzas kuzu, according to the Kabbalists. But since we're all Kabbalists in 2024, whether we know it or not, the article is sort of right. Everyone is a Kabbalist. It's just some people know and some people don't. Most people don't. But you've chosen to attend midweek mysticism, so you sort of know. So what is this about? I wanted to read the commentary. I don't always bring in commentaries, but the commentary of the Sulam, Rabbi Huda Ashlag, it's helpful here to understand the way this is classically understood. So mamash ma'ut otiyot kuzu kuzu. What is the meaning of the letters? Okay, so he first explains, like Rabbi Comfort just explained, that it's a code. Pirush, what's the explanation? That's what we care most about. Hanukvadizer. Okay, I'll just translate it and then I'll explain. The feminine part of the small face of God that is called the revealed world. Mirumezet bekatuv melochal haaretz kavodo is hinted at or alluded to in the verse. The whole world is full of his glory. Hainu, that is, rak be'et shehi nikret b'shem kuzu b'mechzas kuzu, only at the moment that God is called by this name, this cipher name. Hainu rak bo be'et, that is, only at the moment of the recitation of the Shema or the Kiddushah, shehi nechalalet b'yuchud olam ha'elyon, it is included within the unity of the upper world, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem. Hein ha'otiyot, are they the letters? To exclude those moments where the feminine descends to its place itself, b'sod yichud tata'a, in the secret of the lower unity. Sha'az eno b'sod yichud ilah, then it is not in the secret of the upper unity. Va'az eno melocha la'aretz kvodo, and the world is not full of his glory. Ki ina mi'ira rak misod b'yetzira. Okay, so he gives us a equally coded, hard to understand explanation. So allow me. This is the thing about Zohar commentaries. They like to speak in such cryptic terms that they're yet more cryptic than the text itself. There is a moment when we reach up and are so connected to the upper unity, that is, taking all of the disparate divine energies and unifying them in one place, Yesod, that Malchut and Yesod experience union. Namely, that we, because we exist in the world, but the Shechinah, God in this world, but the entire world, elevates and joins with the upper energy, so that there is no distinction between upper worlds and lower worlds. It's like a lightning bolt of absolute unity that is generated by human activity. And at the moment where Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, where God is one here, we kind of join on to the backside of that divine energy. Like if you imagine this sphera as a physical thing, we literally are like riding the back of it. We have a place in the upper worlds. And that place is represented graphically, not by us actually being in the upper worlds, but by the next letter. of the upper worlds. It's like the upper worlds have an afterglow or effect into something beyond the upper worlds, into reality. There is, in other words, an overflow of divine energy beyond divine godly worlds into our human world. And that overflow of energy is represented by an overflow of the letters. And so the letters and the energy of the letters jump out to the next letter. You follow, it's like a cup that runs over. It spills. The energy of the letters of the upper unity spills into our world, or into literally the next letters in the alphabet is the symbolism, or spills off the front of the mezuzah and leaks through the back of the mezuzah in the specifics of kuzu b'muchzas kuzu. And we become part of the divine energy when it can't contain itself, but it only can contain itself when it's unified. And that only happens when we cause it to be unified in this system. And so at the moment where we join with, we say Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuto and recite the Shemar, at the moment when we lift up and recite the words of the Kedushah, understanding the mystical secrets, the Kabbalists imagine that, or maybe it's true, that the divine energies have overflown their vessels, their divine vessels, into our world, and there's a total union. And at that time, God's name isn't really Hashem Elokeinu Hashem, because that God is removed from our world. That is the God who is transcendent, removed from our world, but not immanent, not in our world. To be in our world, God has to leave God's place, the Mekom Kavodo, and it has to be Melo Chol Ha'aretz Kavodo. The whole world is suddenly full of God's glory, and so he must become Kuzu B'Muchzas Kuzu. God must leave God's name, kind of like a, I don't know, like a crab leaving its shell or something like that. God has to leave God's name behind and enter a different place beyond. So that's what the Sulam explains is the secret meaning of Kuzu bin Muchzas Kuzu, which can only occur at moments of Shema, Kedusha, or otherwise kind of human elevation of the entirety of existence. So I think I've tried to explain it. Comments, questions, or hot takes on Kuzu b'muchzas kuzu, but this general idea that divine energy overflows beyond its divine place based on human action or energy and unifying the upper worlds and then causing lower worlds, our world, to join with these worlds such that there's an overflow of divine energy that literally transforms God into something beyond God. It's actually an answer to the question, how does God create anything beyond God's self? So the answer here is it's a secret name, Kuzu b'muchzas kuzu. There's a divine name that's beyond the divine name too. And that's the name of God as unified in our world. But often God is distant from our world and we relate to God. It's also relational. Sometimes we relate to God with unity, and sometimes we relate to God as if our world is devoid of God's presence. I would say a lot of people feel that way now, just the state of the world, right? And God is other, not present. But I don't know, I don't want to speak for people. Okay. I'm going to pause there. Comments?
Can I just ask something of a? It might be mechanical, but when we go back to Yikavu HaMayim Mitachat HaShemayim V'Makom Echad B'Tere, so that's the is the understanding, because when you were doing the sort of mouse on the Sfirot chart, that was really helpful. But is the understanding that that phraseology is like a primordial, like the first time that this kind of gathering of energy happened that we now repeat every time we do Kedusha and then the Shema and other. Is that the idea? Is that the connection that's being made to that particular verse?
Yeah, because they're connecting that verse to theurgic practices, the Shema and the Kedusha. They're two classic things. So they're imagining that that verse is God doing that thing, and now this is us responding. It's like kind of a conversation. God starts the conversation, and then we respond in conversation.
Great.
That's right. I know this is a lot if you're like trying to digest it all.
Is
And I
it
get
accurate
sure.
to? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to move on to a different topic, so you go.
No, I was just going to I was going to comment on the cipher thing. It was just a comment that it was interesting because when you said cipher, my first question was, oh, who are we encoding this from? Who are we trying to keep it secret from? But it sounds like the last response was actually that this isn't really it's not a cipher in the classic sense, but the kuzu b'muchzas kuzu is like an evolutionary, like an evolved step, like you said, like getting out of the crab shell. So that's sorry, it was more of a comment.
Right. Now, they still imagine it, though, as some mystery, because on its surface, this looks like a gibberish name. You know, when you look at the back of your mezuzah, I think most people, even though it's a very simple cipher, and the meaning actually is under, it's intelligible. It's not beyond human intelligence or something. It's not the most complex concept in the Zohar. But still, when you look at the back of a mezuzah and you see this weird string of letters, it's just weird, right? Or mysterious. It's mysterious. It's not anything but mysterious.
The whole concept of the light or the energy, you know, flowing over, is it accurate to say that there always has to be some